You're listening to Eyes and Lows, the podcast where we illuminate real stories of individuals in the blind, low vision, and disability communities, along with advocates making an impact, inspiring others, and navigating the highs and lows of life through resilience and purpose. Today we have with us Savine Venn. Savine is a visionary leader and one of the six co-founders of the Visually Impaired Blind Society, where she currently serves as the president. Despite losing her sight at the age of 41, she has never allowed that to limit her potential. Instead, it fueled a deeper passion for helping others overcome their own challenges. She is also a proud mother of three beautiful daughters and a grandmother to 13 wonderful grandchildren. Savine continues to lead a fulfilling and joyful life in Georgia, where she remains deeply committed to empowering and serving the blind community. Her journey is one of resilience, and she has turned her own adversity into an opportunity to inspire others and create lasting change. Savine, thank you so much for being with us today. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. Why don't you go ahead and tell everyone a little bit about yourself?
Okay. Well, you pretty much touched base on everything as far as the current of the past 10 years. But just to give you a background, I am actually, I was born in Cambodia. So I came here as a refugee asylum because of the war. I came here in 1979. When I was seven and landed in Oregon.
Wow.
Yeah. So by the time I was 12, we moved from the West Coast to the East Coast. So we went from Oregon to Virginia. And then I grew up there, high school, and I moved around a couple times. But I landed here in Georgia about going on 30 years.
Wow. How'd you end up out here?
Me and the kid's father, we were looking for a better opportunity, you know, had more job opportunities down here in Georgia at the time. So we decided to move, and he had family here too. So we came down here, and from there, you know, I worked, of course, and I had my third daughter here. My youngest one was born here in Georgia. So, and then, as you could say, here I am now, you know, losing my vision 13 years ago. So kind of fast forward to now. So, but you know, I always think of it as, hey, things happen for a reason.
Right.
So I've always wanted to be out there, you know, helping others, but I didn't think it would be this way, you know, but I feel like when I was sighted, being a single mom, cause me and the kid's father, we, you know, broke up and I had to kind of, I worked backwards. I went to school, raising my three daughters, school full-time and working full-time. You know, got my associates first and then went to get my bachelor's in technical management. And then, like I said, from there, you know, my health got worse and diabetes kind of hit me, high blood pressure, the stress, and of course, of raising the kids and just working and trying to make ends meet, you know, kind of put a toll on me. And my diabetes wasn't, I guess, what you call it? I should have done better, I guess you could say, maintained well. And so I slowly lost my vision. And then after three surgeries to fix my retinas, from, you know, to keep it from detaching, here I am now. So what I can't see anything. I have a little bit of light perception in my left eye, but my right eye is totally, my retina is totally detached. So that was about 13 years ago.
So it was gradual for you losing your sight?
It was gradual. I think I noticed, like, you know, I've always worn glasses, though. Since I was a kid, I've always had, I had astigmatism in both eyes. So I've always had to wear glasses, contacts. But they always say diabetes usually always attacks your weakest organ first, which is would be my eyes, just because of the fact that, you know, I already was wearing glasses, so I had eye problems. So yeah, gradually I noticed, like, you know, the changes in my eyesight, but I really didn't know that it got that bad until I think in 99, I believe it was, I was working. And my right eye, it felt like a real sharp pain. And then, you know, my eyes was like kind of reddish. I'm thinking like, oh, mate, Lord, I hope I didn't catch, you know, I'm thinking it's like pink eye or eye infection or something. But then I started seeing like this film, almost like a dark film, almost like a spider web kind of thing.
Mm.
And I'm thinking like, what's going on? So, you know, you try to rub your eyes and close your eyes and it didn't help.
Yeah.
So that's when I finally started seeing the eye doctor. And they told me that my retina is detached. You know, so for like a week, like I didn't know what it was. I just know it was painful. So I kept taking, you know, like Tylenol and whatnot. And, you know, it helped the pain. But,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But really the main issue was the fact that my retina had detached on my right side.
Wow. Do you remember feeling or remembering what you felt?
When they told me that, but, you know, at this point, I was already seeing the eye doctor anyway, but I didn't know, like I said, it was going that bad.
Mm-hmm.
When they told me my retina is detached, I'm like, wow. You know, so now I'm completely blind in my right eye.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and their thing was, oh, well, you know, we're going to have to make sure that we keep the left eye from doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so from there, it's like retina doctors, specialists, you know, just to try to keep my left eye. From doing the same thing. But even then, my left eye was still getting bad, too. And then I noticed, like, my vision, I could still see, but my vision started to fade to where I wasn't able to see print.
Mm.
Unless it was, like, dark. You know, I had to use, like, that dark, bold Sharpie pen in order to kind of see.
Yeah.
But then from there, it just kept going downhill. Then I couldn't see print at all, but I could still see. It was like more like you're seeing through like a clear plastic.
Okay.
You know, like I could walk like, and it depending on the light too. So like bright light, I could still see like a nice bright light. I could see everything, but not like clearly like you normally would.
Okay.
But as far as reading, you know, or reading letters or anything like that, I wasn't able to see that. Then if it got dark, I couldn't see because it got too dark. Or like too shady or too cloudy, it got really bad.
Yeah.
If it's too bright, it kind of like makes it like a whiteout.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like you're seeing, you know, you see it, but it's like almost shadow.
How was that for you to accept? Did you feel like you were in denial at some point or you knew what was happening? And
I knew it was happening. And I kind of accept it anyway. Like, I've been through so much. So this, for me, was just another hurdle.
Mm.
I never took it as, oh, my God. Like, I guess going through everything that I've gone through since I was a child, you know, with the war and everything, it just kind of like, oh, well, this is another something I have to deal with. And I knew it was my health. And I couldn't blame nobody but myself for not being more proactive towards taking care of my health and, you know, doing what I had to do. You know, but the circumstances was, you know, when you're a single mom, you really couldn't take time off for work. Even when you know that you're supposed to go see the doctor, but you didn't have that time or that luxury to do that. And I didn't have, like, health insurance, so everything came out of pocket. So already struggling raising the three girls and stuff like that, it's, you know, it's a struggle.
Yeah.
You can't really go and see a doctor if you don't really have the money to pay for it.
Right. And not only are you navigating that, you know, yourself, but you have children that you're taking care of. You're a single mom now.
Yeah.
So what was that transition like, having to go from obviously being sighted to now having to be a mom and a single mom who now cannot see?
Yeah. Fortunately, when all that was happening, you know, my children were in their middle school, high school years. The oldest one, she already was out of high school.
Okay.
And then my middle one, she was in high school. My youngest one was in middle school. But I was losing my vision then. When I completely lost my vision, my youngest one was in still middle school, but going into high school.
Okay.
So it kind of helped that they weren't small children. But of course, I still had to, my youngest one, you know, that I still had to take care of course. And then the middle one, she was working, helping out, you know, with stuff. But of course, every majority of things were still on me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was then, which is a crazy thing, was the same year I lost my vision, I forgot to say, in February of 2013, I had to go through dialysis. I went into renal failure. in February 2013. I lost my vision completely in August of 2013.
Wow.
6 months later. So those are like two major things that I was dealing with at the time. So, you know, it was crazy. But, you know, when the doctor told me after the fourth surgery, actually, because the third surgery after that, 2 weeks later is what I couldn't see anything. 2 weeks later after surgery, so they went back in for the fourth time and tried to figure out what was going on. So they said there was a lot of scar tissue. It was still bleeding. That's how I knew it was something wrong, because I was seeing like red floaters.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went in. He went back in. He's like, yeah, it was some of the blood vessels still bleeding. And but he said a lot of scar tissue. He said the more that he tried to remove the scar tissue, of course, it was causing more scar tissue, more damage. So pretty much I went to see him the next day, and he pretty much told me what you're seeing is what you're going to be seeing. So it's permanent. You know, my first thing in my mind was like, oh, okay. You know, what do I do now?
Like, right.
You know, what do I do now? What next? You know what I'm saying? So I didn't feel shocked. I didn't get angry. Yeah, I was sad because, of course, now, you know, whatever vision I did have, I don't have anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so, but I kind of just took it in stride and, you know, he asked, I've never heard of vocational rehab.
Okay.
That was the first time I heard of it. Because he's like, what are you going to do, Ms. Van? Are you going to, you know, go into vocational rehab? And I was like, what is vocational rehab? Because, you know, being sighted, you don't know some of this stuff. So I said, what's vocational rehab? And he's like, oh, that's when, you know, you go get training to learn how to do things after a disability or something. I said, oh, well, I never heard of that. So when we got home, I told my daughter, my oldest one, I said, well, I guess I better start looking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we kind of researched it. I didn't know where to go.
Yeah.
So like I said, this is my first time ever hearing about it, you know. And what's so crazy is when you're sighted, you don't see a lot of blind folks. Or if you did, maybe you did, but you don't really think about it.
Right.
Because you see them and then they're gone.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, just kind of like, you know, it goes away to where you're like, you're just like, oh, okay. So I never thought about, you know, I've never seen black people walk or do something. But now that, you know, once I became blind, of course, then I see all the blind folks around, visually impaired blind folks. And I guess now that I'm in a community, of course, you know, but so, yeah, we went home. We started researching. I didn't know who to contact calls. So we kind of just went about it, Google search, and see how I get to vocational rehab. You know, so found out some things, called, I could say I called at least 100 numbers to try to figure out, you know, how to get vocational rehabilitation. So I finally called I think a bus driver told me about Disability Link.
Okay.
They're like an IDL, independent, I guess, living agency.
Mm-hmm.
Called them and told me about how to contact Georgia Vocational Rehab.
Okay.
And so I got the number. I called the Atlanta one. I called the 800 number. And at the time, it's like hard to get reach anybody. I think I left about hundreds of messages, you know, called and called. And finally, I finally got, I guess, the right number. And finally, I think my counselor at the time called me back.
Okay.
Now, this was about 3 months later.
Okay.
You know, so I lost my vision in August. So 3 months later.
And then in between time, how were you navigating?
Just moving, using my hands.
Okay.
You know, like just, but I would, you know, I didn't like, I know like how everybody's different.
Yeah.
But for me, I've always been kind of independent anyway. So I just got up and did stuff. You know, I was still able, yeah, I can't see, but I was still capable of doing, you know, moving around. I mean, I bumped into things, you know, but that's how you kind of learn your way around the house, you know, moving around the house and things like that. So one thing they could say is I didn't sit still.
Okay.
You know, I got up and I was still clean. I still washed, you know, and I still cooked.
Mm-hmm.
So I go in the kitchen. Of course, everybody freaks out when I go into the kitchen to clean, you know, to cook and stuff. And especially my dad, he's like, oh, my God, what you doing? You know, you shouldn't be cooking and this and that. You're going to cut yourself. You're going to hurt yourself, you know. And he's always yelling at the kids, like, go help your mom. Don't make her do this. Don't let her do that. You know. So I was like, no. I said, I need to learn. You know what I'm saying? My thing is, don't do that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, let me do it because I need to learn.
Yeah, for sure.
Because, you know, and I think this is what it is a lot of times when family members see family members, you know, any type of disabilities, but, you know, even with vision, though, they all scared, like, oh, you're going to hurt yourself. And they want to just, you know, be there. And it's good that I do have the support, you know, because like I say, a lot of people don't. But, you know, like I said, I'm independent. So I've always like, let me do my way.
Yeah.
Let me learn. You know, don't coddle me.
Yeah.
You know, and don't pity me either, because that's one thing I always tell the kids, don't pity me. you know what I'm saying? It's something that happens. I accepted it. Everybody have to accept it.
And I can imagine it was a shock for your family as well. And of course, you know, you said that you have the support. But in the beginning, did you find that that was very, I guess, was support lacking in the beginning, or was it very difficult for them to adjust?
Fortunately for me, like I said, I can't say a lot for other people, but for me, my family was very supportive. You know, saying my kids, all of them, serious. I had my little brother, my dad, my mom, she passed away already, and my sister too. So with the ones that I did have left, they were always, you know, supportive of me. And, well, I became blind before my mom passed away, but she couldn't help me anyway. She was disabled herself. So, you know, due to a stroke. So she was, she couldn't move.
Okay.
You know, and my sister, she had cancer. So it was like a lot going on for me. So at the time, losing my vision, going through dialysis, and then, you know, my sister, I took care of my sister, being blind, and I'm blind. She's, you know, cancer ridden, and she couldn't really, you know, do much for herself and stuff like that. So, and then of course my mom was bedridden. So it was just a lot. And, you know, me being the oldest after my sister, of course, she was the oldest, but you know, it was a lot on me, but thank God my daughters had my back.
Yeah.
You know, so they were helpful. And my brother, you know, helping me when I need to go to dialysis or go to a doctor and things like that. But they were very supportive. But what I did notice was the friends that I thought I had, they kind of dropped off.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. So how did that happen? What was that like?
Well, you know, it's almost like when you become blind, it's like, you know, the communication gets less. They're either busy. It's always something. But, you know, you know what it is. So, and I'm not one to, you know, kind of be like, oh, well, you got to, or pressure anybody to do it. You know, I just kind of let it go. Because as I always say, when you know when who your true friends are.
When something happens.
When things
right?
happen. And you know who your family is when things happen. So I always lean back on the support of my family. So, and I made new friends, of course. You know, now, of course, in being in the Black community, I made a lot of new friends. You know, so I have a few good friends that are in the Black community themselves.
Okay.
You know, so you lose friends and you make friends.
Do you think that it is easier, or it was easier for you to make friends who were also in the blind and low vision community than it was for you to make friends with those who were sighted?
Yeah, because when you get into the community, you know, everybody kind of understand, especially if they've gone through almost the same thing where, you know, you live your life and then you become blind. I met, you know, that's how I met the co-founders, is when I started training at CVI.
Okay.
And that's where I met a lot of my, you know, new friends, of course. And that's how I met the other five co-founders of, you know, of VIPS. And, you know, we all kind of understood each other because we all lost our vision later on in life. And each of us came from, of course, different backgrounds, different experiences, but we all have that same experience of, you know, living in a sighted world and now becoming, you know, totally living in the dark, I guess you could say.
So what were some of those, I guess, shared experiences that you guys have had being formerly sighted?
You know, we all have our professional careers, you know. So one of us came from, you know, corporate finance, a tech person, IT person, one worked in the department of the, you know, the Treasury Department.
So, oh, wow.
You know, yeah. So a lot of us came from business.
Uh-huh.
I was a manager for Walmart, Victoria's Secret. So we all came from like different management experiences or, mm-hmm. you know, IT and all that stuff. But we all came to where our health got us to where we are, you know, losing our vision. And everybody lost their vision due to different things.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I know my friend Sonia, she passed away. She was going through the same thing with diabetes and dialysis, you know. And others had like glaucoma or some other type of eye disease.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it kind of bonded us, I guess, in a way.
Okay. So tell me how this idea of starting the Visually Impaired Blind Society came about, and tell us a little bit more about that and what you guys do.
Okay. So we all, like I said, we all went to Center for the Visually Impaired, and I came up, it started really funny though. Mm-hmm. I had threw my birthday party, you know, invited them over. And so I threw a birthday party for myself, and I, you know, and I thought about it, and I said, huh, this would be fun, because I, you know, being in community is not like a lot of things a lot of people do,
mm-hmm.
you know, besides you go out to eat or whatever. But I said, there's really not like a big socialization to where you just get together, dress up, do, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, anybody go out to eat. That's really, you know, nothing.
Right.
Right. You can go with your family. So we've gone to the movies, things like that. So I threw my birthday party, and I was like, huh, I wonder if like, maybe we should do something bigger on a bigger grand scale. Because like even with Christmas, you know, the center does like a little Christmas party. But, you know, it's just you go in for a couple hours, you sit and people bring in food like a potluck and you sing Christmas carols. And I'm like, it, you know, to me, that's not a party.
Yeah.
You know, say so. And I wanted to do something more. Mm-hmm. So I called my peoples up and I say, hey, what you guys think about us throwing a Christmas party this year? Because my birthday's in June. So I'm thinking, you know, maybe we do something in, you know, for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Because I said, you know, I said, yeah, you know, CVI does it. But, you know, is it really a party? It's more like a potluck dinner type of lunch, really. So they're like, what you thinking? So I say, you know, we get like a venue, charge like $20, covers the food and BYOB type of thing. And it'll give them a chance to kind of dress up, you know. Yeah, you can't see, but so what? You still know. The nails, the layers can get the hair done and nails done. You know, guys dress up and stuff like that. So they're like, okay, well, what you think? So we started looking at different venue spaces and things like that. The first year was a potluck type of thing. We all pitched in to cook, family members, you know. And we sold tickets, and it was a big success. I think we were expecting maybe 40, 50 people.
Mm-hmm.
We had 90.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so...
Wow.
Yeah. So it was a big turnout. So we were like, oh, wow. After that, we all just like, hey, why not do something else? Because this, since it's such a great success, maybe we could do something more. So we decided to start our own nonprofit. Get toward bringing more people to be active, more social, providing like, you know, different activities.
Because
we like to do different things ourselves. And also to make sure that we can get the referrals, you know, resources that we could share or provide to other people who's going through stages of loss. So, because for all of us, it was hard for us to find the help, you know, so we kind of knew what we're going through. So we wanted to be able to be like, hey, call us or, you know, talk to us so we can kind of lead you or guide you to where you need to call. The numbers, you know, here's the numbers, here's the agencies you need to contact and things like that. But at the same time, we wanted to be able to say, hey, just because you lost your sight doesn't mean that you have to sit indoors behind, you know, behind closed doors.
Right. Stop living. You
don't
have to
stop living. Life's still going on outside those doors.
Right.
You know, so we can still do things a little differently. Yes, we can't see, but we can still enjoy ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our whole motto and what we thought about doing. So basically, it was to bring more social interaction and, like I say, promote independence and breaking the social barriers, right? Both economically and socially between, you know, the two communities, sighted and non-sighted. So that was our main goal, was just to promote that.
I love that. You know? When did you guys start this?
So we had our first party December 2016.
Okay.
And so after that, we, you know, research what we need to do in order to get our nonprofit started. And a lot of people didn't believe that we could do it.
Mm-hmm.
I had a guy's counselor told me that I was wasting my time.
Wow.
You know, I need to focus more on trying to get a job and, you know, just doing that. So, you know, we pushed forward. We got our bylaws because we knew we needed to do a bylaw. And one of our co-founders, Philip Hodges, he already have a business. So we kind of took his bylaws and kind of just took it and changed it a little bit, you mm-hmm. know, to make it to where it's a nonprofit and not a for-profit.
Okay.
So we took some of that, added some more stuff to it, you know, some of the different things that needed to be added for a nonprofit
mm-hmm.
to become a nonprofit. And then we had help, you know, with family members to read the bylaws, also to help us with the other parts of it. And then one of the other board members, Lafayette Wood, he was able to reach a lawyer who would help us file the application.
Nice.
For free.
Nice.
So once we turn in the bylaws and, you know, we registered ourselves with the Secretary of State and all the necessary documentation and stuff like that, we went ahead and gave her the money order for the cost at the time was like $250
mm-hmm.
for what we wanted. I think it was like $50,000 or less, a nonprofit that's under mm-hmm. $50,000 or less. So she took it. She looked at the document she sent. She's like, okay, I'll go ahead and get the application done, filled out, and turn it in. And she did that. I think maybe 3 months later, we got a letter saying that we were approved to get our tax exempt status. I think that was in June or July of 2017.
Nice.
So, you know, and then from there, we have our party once a year.
Okay.
Our annual party. And this is our 9th one coming up in September.
So what other activities do you guys do throughout the year?
So different things. So 2015, we did a cruise, like right before the first party.
Okay.
We were planning a cruise. We went to the Bahamas on a cruise.
Nice.
So that was our first big type of event. And then from there, you know, we do different things. We've done the casino trip. We've done a lazy river trip.
So
we went tubing on a lazy in Helen. We went down the lazy river. And then we're doing zip lining coming up the
nice.
End of July. Let's see. And then we're planning a iFly.
Oh, okay.
Doing the inside skydiving type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's coming up for a 4-hour itinerary. That's part of our September event.
Okay. I love that. So do you guys have members or do people have to be members to be a part of it or they can kind of just come in whenever you have an event?
No, it's open to everybody. We're always there. We're all inclusive. We do have members, of course,
mm-hmm.
and members get priority
mm-hmm.
in all of our events, you know, especially when the tickets, you know, and stuff like that. So all our members always get priority. And then, of course, the general comes in after that.
So what do you have to do to become a member?
So the membership is $25 a year.
Okay.
We only charge $25 because we always feel like if you believe in our mission and believe in our cause, it's always good to invest in a little bit of something that you believe in.
Yeah.
And I believe like $25 a year is nothing. You
right.
know, but it does help make us feel like you believe in who we are and what we're trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have right now about close to 30 active members.
Nice.
And we always believe in more quality than quantity.
Yeah.
And so each member brings in their unique experiences
mm-hmm.
And skill set. We have about 8 board members now. We got 4 new ones. So we all have like different areas. Of course, it's me, you know, the president, and then Tony Asbury, our vice president, and Rob Jackson. He's our director of charitable contributions. But mm-hmm. Me and him, Rob Jackson, we're the only 2 out of the 6
okay.
that helped form the organization.
Okay.
And then Tony came in, I think maybe a year or 2 after we formed it. And now we have Chris Douglas, who's our director of fundraising, and Rosa Allen, who's our director of community outreach and events.
Mm.
And Melissa Reyna, she's out of Houston. She's our marketing director. And we have Philip Hodges, Philip Brown, who's our treasurer now. And April Church, she's our director of membership. And then we have Bun Wang Wan, who's our secretary. So we have eight people who, they all bring their own special skills and experiences to the organization. So we're I believe we're going in the right direction as far as growing where we wanted to go.
Absolutely. And I love that. And I love, you know, this concept, this idea, because it is true that a lot of people after diagnosis, they feel like their life has ended and they're unable to socialize or, you know, they rather not. And a lot of that is because of the reasons that you mentioned, you know, people turn away from you, people aren't supportive. And so they feel as though they don't have anyone. So that I think this is a really great way to connect people with the community. You mentioned that there were some people, namely a counselor, that said that basically you couldn't or shouldn't do this. Do you find that a lot of people put limitations on you?
Yes.
And if so, what does that look like for you?
I think, yes, they do, just because being, I guess, we look more upon as a liability a lot of times, you know, because a lot of people don't understand, you know, some of the vision issues. But when they look at us, oh, you can't see. So the first thing they think is, oh, you're going to hurt yourself or you're not going to be able to do this because you can't see, you know, everything. Because when you're sighted, everything is based on what you see, what you hear.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So when you can't see, that's a main focus on. Or well, you can't see the computer screen, you can't see where you're walking, you can't see what you're doing. So how are you going to be doing it? You know, and thank God technology has gone, you know, moved forward so much to where now things are a lot easier to do, you know, the different apps and things like that to help us kind of maneuver life, I guess, whether it be mobility or, you know, working and things like that. But still, at the same time, people still see you as a liability because they always feel like they have to change things, you know, safety-wise, or, you know, when you're working on a computer, they have to add things or, you know, add different programs and software. And I think the limitations like that can really hurt somebody's chances of, you know, becoming more independent. Because we want to be able to, you know, say that, hey, we could do this too. Yeah, we could see, but there's so much technology out there that we're able to, you know, get the work done, you know.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of people don't give us the opportunity just because of the fact that we can't see.
So what would, if you have the opportunity to tell people, whether, you know, employers or advocates of any kind, what advice would you give them concerning working with individuals who are blind or have low vision?
Well, give us a chance to kind of like say, hey, here is something that will help me out. You know, and it's not a lot. People just assume that's going to be a lot.
Yeah.
You know, with the screen readers, JAWS, and of course, Apple have their own.
Yeah.
And Microsoft have their own, you know, screen reader systems. You know, a lot of times employees don't want to have to, I guess, download software or change software. But at the same time, you know, if you hire people who are visually impaired and blind, you get a tax deduction, some kind of tax break. But also, same time, when we go in there, most of the time, they won't have to do it because, like, vocational rehab would pay for the software, you know, and things like that for that. So financially, they're not going to be burdened with us, you know. And as far as safety, you know, that's what we learn mobility for.
Yeah.
We know how to maneuver ourselves and things like that. So I feel like just give us a chance instead of just saying, hey, you can't do it because you can't see.
Yeah.
You know, so just take a chance on us. Give us, you know, a chance to prove ourselves.
Absolutely.
You know,
and obviously you've been through a lot, your fair share, that could have maybe spread over a few lifetimes. So with that being said, I mean, you're obviously resilient. You know, you haven't let anything stop you from doing what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
So what does resiliency mean to you?
Just being persistent, you know what I'm saying? Just keep moving forward. Sometimes you're going to get out of no's, you know what I'm saying? But you have to work through those no's. You know, they say fall down, get up and dust yourself off. Just keep pushing.
Right.
You know, because eventually, you know, you're not always going to win the battle.
Yeah.
You know, or you pick and choose. But at the same time, if you just give up, then you pretty much just lost, you know, the war.
Yeah.
Right. And you're not always going to get where you want to be, but at least get close.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to take small steps in order to get to the goals, right? Mm-hmm. I always say set a goal and then just take small steps to get there. Because those steps going to lead, you know, small steps lead to big steps. And it's going to lead you to your goal. But it's also up to each individual, their motivation and mm-hmm. the willpower or the ambition
right.
to keep doing it. I sometimes, you know, you get frustrated.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, because sometimes things just don't seem to be going where you want it to go.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever you try, you know, it's not going to where you want it to be. But
right.
at the same time, do you just sit there and give up? Or do you just keep going? You just might have to find different avenues, different directions
mm-hmm.
to reach that particular goal.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's so good. Just the perseverance. And you have to be persistent.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes you have to keep going. You know, it might take you 3-4 times. It might take you once. But you never know unless you try.
Yeah. And I've spoken to different people with different experiences, mm-hmm. obviously. But I have noticed something similar in individuals who had sight and then lost it versus those who were maybe born
mm-hmm.
blind. So in that case, you are losing something, right? You have mm-hmm. you have lost something. And I know that you mentioned that you were a little sad about it, but you didn't let it stop you. But
mm-hmm.
At the same time, again, you have to have time to grieve something that you've lost.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you've gone through that grieving process? Did you suffer any depression as a result to your loss?
No.
Okay.
That's one thing I can say. I didn't go through depression.
Okay.
There was a lot of frustration, sometimes anger.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't anger because of my sight loss.
Mm-hmm.
It was the anger, the fact that I can't, you know, saying I can't just jump in a car. And
yeah.
go, or I can't read a letter when I need to read a letter.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was. It's just the frustration of just not being able to do things yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're first losing it, because you don't know about the technologies or some of the things that you could use to help you navigate through that
yeah.
type. You know, you're depending on other people.
Right.
And that's really what got me was having to depend on people.
Right. Because you spent a lot of time being independent,
mm-hmm.
you know, doing everything yourself.
Yeah. And so that's why I said having the support system
mm-hmm.
is great because it helps you work through that frustration and, you know, you can still get things done. But as you continue to move on the journey of losing your sight, you meet other people that can help you. Hey, try this app. Or, you know, try this technology here and see if you can, you know, it'll help you do more. And so mm-hmm. it kind of helps you break down that anxiety and the stress of not being able to do more for yourself. And so that's why it's always good to reach out when you're going through things like that, because you never know what you're going to learn.
Right.
And so if you just keep it to yourself and you know, you're sitting there stressed and frustrated, it's not really doing anything to your mental health. And
mm-hmm.
I think that's some of the concept that we look at it too. It's like, if we can get people out
mm-hmm.
and socialize amongst other people who are going through the same things or similar things,
mm-hmm.
we could kind of, you know, help them kind of like, hey, see, this is other people are just like you.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are. So it kind of breaks the mold
mm-hmm.
of them feeling like I'm stuck.
Yeah.
It helps them release some of that stress and anxiety. And so I feel like it helps the mental aspect of their life, too.
Hmm.
You know, bring more joy. More
right.
happiness.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that there's also individuals who are blind or have low vision. They feel like they don't necessarily want to be around individuals who are like them or always be around them as a reminder,
mm-hmm.
You know, about their disability, or they don't want to be pigeonholed, right? Or
mm-hmm,
saying,
mm-hmm.
I have a disability. I can do the same things that sighted individuals are doing. So they would prefer, not saying that they don't interact
mm-hmm.
with other blind or low vision individuals, but they prefer to be around everyday sighted individuals alongside those who are blind or have low vision because they feel that it helps to, I guess, eliminate the stigma.
Mm-hmm.
that has been placed on them. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, we do have those.
Okay.
But, you know, you can only help those that want to be helped,
mm-hmm.
you know. And everybody have their choices, their own opinions and viewpoints of things. And so, you know, we reach out to people like that. But if they don't want the help, or if that's how they feel, you know, what can we do about it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but eventually it's going to get to a point where you're going to need the help,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it's, yeah, you don't want to be pigeonholed and be a part of the disability. But I feel like me, myself, just my opinion on that aspect of things is you don't want to be around the community that you're a part of. So are you feeling shame? You know what I'm saying? Ashamed of your condition? Are you ashamed of the fact that you are now part of that community? Or is it, you know what I'm saying, like you say, you don't want a reminder, but you're living it. So every day is a reminder.
Yeah.
But wouldn't you be around other people that, hey, maybe you can get out of that cycle of, oh, you know, poor me kind of thing, or, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, everybody have their own feelings and stuff like that. So, and I've known people who, I guess in a social part of it is, they don't want to deal with people who are blind or visually impaired, or they don't want to date anybody in a blind or visually impaired because they can't help them.
Mm-hmm.
So my thing is, there's plenty of people who are in the blind community that are more independent.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? That live life just like a normal, everyday sighted person.
Sometimes better.
Sometimes better, right? And doing more.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I feel like when you put yourself in that corner where you don't want to deal with people like yourself,
mm-hmm.
I feel like there's something wrong. I'm not saying that it is, but it's just my, like I said, my opinion things.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like deep down, you're feeling some type of way about your vision loss, and you haven't come to terms with it.
Mm.
Or, you know, you just feel like, oh, they're not going to be beneficial to me.
Mm.
You know, so, but to each his own.
Right. Now, you touched on a topic I want to ask you about dating.
Mm-hmm.
Dating in the blind and low vision community, like you said, people have certain preferences. They might believe, well, you know, if they're blind also, they can't help me.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're willing to share, what is dating like for you? I mean, I'm assuming it's the same.
It is.
I'm assuming it's the same, you know, so I don't want to say that. But I guess I'm asking your experience as far as dating. Do you find that people make it more difficult for those who are blind or have low vision to date?
It's only difficult. You make it difficult.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So it's the same. Like in a sighted community where, you know, you meet people. Of course, the only difference is you can't see how they look.
Mm-hmm.
So now you can't be like, oh, he's cute or she's cute. Or You know what I'm saying? So now it's all about the voice, the personality, and basically that, the sense that you have, the vibe, the, you know, the aura the person gives out.
Okay.
But it's just like blind dating, literally. You know how you have blind dates?
Right.
We're living it.
Right.
Literally living a blind date. So anybody that you meet first, you know, you go out on a date, it's a blind date.
Uh-huh.
Right? So you never know what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but and it could be kind of hard because now it's like, especially if you were sighted before and now you have to judge everything by what you hear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or your other senses, you know, the in-tuneness of the person, the, you know, their personality.
Right.
And, you know, of course, you're not going to be able to know how they could tell you how they look.
Right.
So now you just kind of picture how they look, but they probably look totally different from what you have in your head.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And then sometimes the voice is like, oh, they sound like they're, you know, cute or, you know, skinny or big or, you know, whatever, you know what I'm saying? So you probably just have to kind of dig that, but you won't know until you hug them.
Right.
You know, to get the feel of how they are physically, tall, short, you know, that kind of thing. We always joke, like, could we braille you? You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you go touch it, how braille, right?
Right.
But really. You know, so, but of course you don't want to do that because now you're in their personal space.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, until you're comfortable enough to say, hey, can I, you know, give me a hug, or so you could kind of guess like how they are built physically, you know, but it's almost like you have to take that chance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I know for me, I've dated sighted men too, after I became, you know, totally blind.
Mm-hmm.
The experience was okay, but I noticed like Some of them kind of like they don't want to bring you outside. Like, you know, behind closed doors is great. But it's almost like they're ashamed to bring you out into public, you know. So that's my experience. I can't say that for everybody.
Okay.
And so I dated men who are visually impaired. I still have some sight.
Do you feel like that's just the same as well? Do you think that that just happens?
That just kind of happens, you know. But, and I know it's like some of them don't want to date a total blind woman, you know, even though they're visually impaired.
Right.
They don't want to date a totally blind woman. You know, it's always some kind of, oh, but, you know, my thing is, what can you do? We need something, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay. You know, nowadays, you can get anywhere, do anything you want.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So what's that excuse?
Right.
But hey, if that's your preference, that's your preference. And, you know, of course, I dated totally blind men, so. And, you know, like, they men all have the same thing, whether they're sighted or not, okay? So it's it does not change just because they're blind. It does not mean that there could be a, you know what I'm saying, a jerk or the A word. And don't ever think that they won't cheat. It does, it's they still do the same thing as their counterparts do. You know, so it's just a matter of who you meet.
Right.
You know, because some some blind men think they still God's gift to women. you know, and it vice versa. Some women still same thing. You know what I'm saying? But so it's no difference in a dating field when it comes to dating in a blind community or dating in a sighted community. We all face the same type of, you know, issues.
And stupidity.
And stupidity, that's right. And there's a lot of them. So, so yeah, so no, everything is anything different. But, you know, for me, fortunately, like I said, I met my boyfriend. He lives in Houston, so we, I'm here, he's there. So, you know, but we met on an app, Clubhouse.
Okay.
You know, he came into our Vibs room and I always joke, I always tell him, I say, you came and never left. You know? So we always...
You hooked them.
We, yeah. So I'm always make a joke like, you know, when you heard my voice, it was over. You know? So, you know, so he says the same thing, you know. So, you know, he have his version of it and I have mine. So, but, you know...
We know the truth.
Yeah, we know the truth, you know. But, yeah, so we've been dating now for about... About over 4 years.
Oh, that's nice.
You know, so like I said, I just got back from seeing him. So
nice.
And so, you know, we make take turns going back and forth. So, but he works. So now it's me more traveling to him. Before he got the job, he came like for my birthday or I go for his birthday.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. But now since he work, I'm doing more of the traveling.
That's
you
nice. Know,
so, but like I said, it, you meet some really cool people.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of them are very, you know, understanding. And if you meet the right people, they're very loyal. You know, so, and you kind of understand each other because you're sharing the same experiences.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always say, give people a chance before you just assume certain things, you know, whether whatever disability they have, whether they're, you know, deaf, in a wheelchair, or blind, or anything, really. Learn to talk to them. It's all about communication and just giving people a chance to, you know, express themselves. You'll be surprised what you learn and what you find out.
Well, that's nice to hear that you're dating.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what do you do for you, for fun, hobbies?
Okay, so I like to listen to books. I've always been an avid reader.
Okay.
Even before I became blind. I love books. I'm more of a book person than a TV person. So before I was blind, I'll curl up on a, you know, on my days off in bed and just, I have the TV on, but I'm reading a book.
Okay.
You know, the TV's more like just noise.
Background noise.
Background noise. And, but if, especially if it's raining, I like to curl up with a book. I have my TV shows, but I'm not big. I like game shows and like HGTV, you know, that kind of stuff. ID Discovery, that kind of channels. Like I'm not big on like other stuff. Now I like audible books. I listen to a book all day. That's to me is entertainment because I feel like now with you're blind, when you listen to audiobooks, it's like you're watching a movie, but more descriptive, you know, more detailed. So you kind of put your characters together in your own head. It's the scene in your head. You
know? Right.
So it's like me watching a movie, right? So that, I like gardening. I do a little here and there.
What are you growing now?
Right now, this year, I haven't grown anything.
Okay.
Because we're moving. So I didn't want to start a garden. We're moving. So usually I grow it into planters. Like but last year I had like planters everywhere.
Okay.
You know, plastic containers, whatever.
Yeah.
I've grown mint. I've grown basil. Mm. I've grown watermelon, tomatoes. I even grow garlic, y'all. Ginger.
Wow.
I have a whole bag of seeds.
Wow.
I've ordered like a whole bunch of seeds. I've got like a berry mix, different berries, a melon. So I got different watermelon, cantaloupes, all that. Then I got a variety of like 42 different vegetables and herbs.
Wow.
So I'm ready for my garden.
Yeah.
I just probably when I get settled with the move, you know. But I like to grow in planter because I know my friends laugh at me, but I'm afraid of little things like worms and caterpillars and definitely afraid of snakes. So
creepy crawlies.
Creepy crawlies. Mm-hmm. And if I could see, it's a different story, mm-hmm. you know. But going blind and sticking your hand in dirt, you know, I just can't do it. Because if I feel something crawling on my fingers, it's over.
Right.
You know, so I'm more of I just buy like pots and stuff and buy soil.
Okay.
You know, and I use the soil for the thing. And that way, and it also helps because I don't have to worry about weeding.
Right.
That's another thing, too. Sometimes you have to find simplified ways to do things that you like. So growing a garden is one of those things that I kind of learned how to simplify it for me, make it easier for me, you know, because like I said, I'm afraid of worms.
Yeah.
And anything else, you know, so and the weeding, because when you're growing things, you don't want to go and have to weed and pulling out your actual plants.
Yeah.
You know, of course, but you can feel the plants. Mm-hmm. But still, you know, that's make it simple for me.
Yeah.
You know, so. But I grow like, you know, I buy those little storage plastic containers, drill holes in the bottom, make it into my planters.
Right.
You know, line them up neatly. So you have a whole garden, a container garden. And so I like that. I like cooking.
Okay.
You know, I have a YouTube channel that I need to really add no videos to it, but I haven't done it in like a couple months. I've just been busy.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't done any new cooking videos yet to add to it. So I have that. I like to cook. So
I like to eat. So, you know. Might have to call you up.
Right. Yeah, so that's my thing. I like cooking, you know, gardening, reading.
If anyone wanted to learn more about the Visually Impaired Blind Society or just the projects that you're working on and maybe even help donate their time or anything like that, how can they get involved? How can they contact you?
Okay. They can definitely go to our website. It's www.vlikevictoribelikeboysociety.org. Pretty much is Visually Impaired Blind Society. So it's www.vibsociety.org. That's our website address, or you can send us an email to info@vibsociety.org, or you can give us a call at 770-609-7439. And you usually get me, because I am the one who answers the phone. So you'll be talking to me.
Awesome. So if you would like to get involved or learn more, please visit the website. As she mentioned, is www.vibsociety.org.
Yes.
Give her a call, send her an email, or visit the website. Okay. We'd like to thank you so much, Shaveen, for coming on our podcast, Eyes and Lows, and sharing your story and encouraging others who may be experiencing something similar or maybe something completely different. But your resilience and persistence can definitely inspire many people, sighted and blind and low vision.
Thank you as for well. Having me. I appreciate the opportunity to share.
Of course. And you are doing amazing, amazing work. Anything that we can do to assist, please let us know.
Yeah. Can I share what we're having up coming up in September?
Absolutely. Please do.
Yeah. So we are having our 9th annual fundraising event. So everybody's invited.
Okay.
And, you know, it's open to the public, whether you're sighted, non-sighted. And there's always a joke amongst us. You haven't partied until you party with the blind folks because we can't see. So everything goes. You know, so come out and join us. But also, you know, it helps us provide more resources and things like that. It's $65 per person.
Okay.
It does include a full dinner, so appetizer through dessert. And it's an open bar. So we provide the beverages,
they love
the dinner.
Open bar.
Yes. And once you purchase your ticket, you're automatically entered into our prize drawing. So we have really good prizes, gift cards, Publix, cash. You never know.
Awesome.
You never know what you're getting. So please come out. Tickets are on sale now. Just go to our website, vipsociety.org/tickets to get your tickets. You have until August 20th to get it at $65. After that, it's $75. Everybody's welcome. And the theme this year is 1950s / country western. So you can come dressed up like in the 1950s or country western, or you can do
or
a fusion.
Both.
I'm going in at both. So
nice.
I got my little cowboy girl boots on, so I'm going to put that and get me a poodle skirt, something.
Nice.
Maybe a hat, you know. But I'm going in as an infusion. But definitely come out and join us and support a good cause and a great organization and just, you know, help us keep our mission. And we're also seeking volunteers. So, you can't come think, but we always looking for volunteers. And it's just to be there to help serve the food. And just guide people to the restrooms or whatever they need help with. So yeah, if you want to be a volunteer, please reach out to us.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing, Savine.
Thank you, Brittany.
All right. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Eyes and Lows. See you next time.